a real deal. I'll shoot your liver out and hand it to you.
Demetrius is gone. We had to scour the ends of the earth and find Jay Garrison to join us for this week's podcast. Jay, what's up, man?
Hey, how are you guys today? Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and anybody who lives under a rock in the pool world and doesn't recognize your name, why don't you give a couple second rundown of what you do and give a little pitch for them to get over there and help support you?
Well, you know what, Nate? They don't know my name. They know what I run, but, you know, they probably just know me as Jay, but I am the guy behind Level 2 Billiards, which is the number one, I say it's the number one social media page in definitely in the United States, but could be in the world as well. When we're not living in the COVID world, it averages about 3 million views a month on Instagram, and there's a small Facebook presence. And I just opened TikTok, too, so I'm having fun with TikTok. But really, it's Level 2 Billiards on Instagram, and essentially, if it's got to do with pool, it's on that Instagram page.
Yeah, so that can be found at Level 2 Billiards. Just search that up at Facebook or Instagram or wherever you do your social media. Do you have like a Reddit presence or anything like that?
Yeah, you really want, if you want to really to get the best experience, you want to do it on Instagram, because each week, we do live shows. There's a few different live shows that we do on Instagram that we don't do on Facebook. Sunday nights.
And that was going to be my next plug.
Every other Sunday with Mike DeShane, there's a roundtable show. And then starting next week is a show with a fan. Me with a fan and stuff like that. Plus, every week there's live interviews with the best pros in the world, plus industry executives. So if you name the pro player, chances are they have been interviewed by me as well as industry executives. So as a matter of fact, I have one tonight with Marco, and then Saturday, this coming Saturday, Tiger, Tony from Tiger, this president and CEO of Tiger Products. We're going to talk about Tiger shafts and cues and Tiger Sniper and tips and like that. We're going to get pretty technical on this stuff too, not just talk about products, but a lot of fun on the Instagram.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, Rob, you're also here. What's up, Rob?
Well, fellas, it's nice to be here again. I'm sitting on my back porch looking out on a sunny backyard with a old beat-up golfing flag on a kind of an elevated corner end of my yard. The sun shining on it. The flag is tattered and torn because it's been there for 10 years. But I keep asking my wife for a birthday present for a new flag for my flag in the green back there, but I don't get it.
Alas, no good presents for you. This is way better. That sounds way better than fishing. What did you want to go fishing today for? That sounds boring.
I am going to go fishing when we're done today.
Oh, well, never mind then. We better get going so we can get you out fishing then, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
All right. But before we get jumping in, we need to get the stuff cleared up in the beginning. There's not a lot, and that should make sense since we just released an episode a couple days ago. But I will give a plug again for the Patreon. If anybody out there is interested in supporting the content that we are making here, you can always do that through the Patreon program. Also, if you own a business or know anybody who does and would like to sponsor with the podcast, please reach out to the podcast. Or if you just have any listener questions or anything for the end of the podcast, we have actually quite a few listener questions right now that we're sitting on. And once Demetrius gets back, we will start doing those again. But if you have something that you would like to ask us, Demetrius, myself, Rob, anybody here, please feel free to reach out to the podcast page on Facebook, queueitupodcast.com, or queueitupodcast@gmail.com, and we will get your questions read on air, and we will all discuss them. So please feel free to do that or any of the other things that I've talked about here, and other than that, we can get started up. You had a shout-out last week that you were talking about, so why don't you go first and give that one today?
This shout, whatever I said last week, never mind, doesn't matter. I probably forgot it.
Sounds right.
This is this shout out goes to a local. Actually, he is recently inducted to the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame. His name is Craig Powers. He's from the Milwaukee area. A retired UPS driver. And he's a tremendous pocket pool player, but also in the last 10 years, he's getting up the charts in the three-cushion billiard world. And there was a challenge match between him and the best player in the state of Minnesota, Freddie Lommers from the billiard club in Minneapolis. And they went down to the club in Madison, Wisconsin, the three-cushion billiard club there, and had a match, a race to 30, the first one to win two sets. One set goes to 30. So and the winner of that is Craig Powers. He won 2-1. The scores were roughly 30-15 one way and 30-15, 30-15 again the other way. So one guy got kind of beat up on one match and the other guy got beat up twice. So the two best players in either state. So my shout-out goes to Craig. Nice job, Craig. I know Craig. I've known him for many years and played against him, mostly pocket pool, but there's some three-cushion also.
If anybody wanted to watch that match, is that available anywhere?
That is available, yeah. You can go to Madison Three Cushion Billiards, and there's a link on there for, I believe, a Facebook link that has a YouTube link that has it, I think. But, yes, you can watch it, all three sets.
All right. Well, Jay, would you like to go next?
For a shout-out? Yeah, love the shout-out. Hey, Rob, I listen to the podcast. I love when you do the shout-outs because I love learning new things, by the way.
Oh.
and me being in New Jersey, I don't know anything about what's going on in Wisconsin. So I love hearing that you do that stuff. I want to shout-out two people. I want to shout-out first my favorite girl in the whole world, April Larson. She has been on a journey lately. You can follow her on her page, but she's doing so well. April, I love it. Love what you're doing. You're an inspiration. That's number one. Number two, I want to point out, if you're on Instagram, I want you to follow Croc Dunn. I want you to look at his page and take a look at his videos that he puts up. It's his Instagram page is CrocDunn and then underscore. So it's at CrocDunn underscore. He is a banking phenom. So take a look at him. And he lives down on the, I think in the Outer Banks. And he likes to keep a very anonymous, doesn't want to know anybody to know his name or anything, but old school pool player, has unbelievable education, will talk to anybody. But you definitely want to check out his videos.
Awesome. Yeah, and I can echo that April thing. That getting her to, I guess, following along with her journey during this COVID has been awesome. She's really putting a lot of work in, and it's great to see. So I will echo that as well.
Yeah, I met April, and I have a lot of respect for her, as young as she is, how mature she is. And
she's pool sweetheart. Everybody
loves
April Larson.
Yeah, no, it is great for pool, for sure. Yeah. Great for her.
She inspires me, and and I'm, I don't know, 30 years older than her, and she motivates me to be a better person. How about that? She's just all around good person.
Yeah,
the pool world needs more.
Yeah, definitely.
Bring them on, more April Larsons and more Tyler Spires, and really, these are good people playing pool.
For sure.
Yeah. All right, so I will give my shout-out now, and my shout-out is going to go to David Al-Kaidi, and we're going to be talking about his event. Not all of it's going to be positive, but it is all going to be productive. And what I mean by that is what they did ultimately, and we'll talk about this later on, of course, as well, but what they did was awesome. I mean, the event that they put on, it was suspenseful. I found myself, I'd put a little $20 sweater out there with somebody in the chat room and just have a little bit of fun with it. And I was sweating it, I think, more than the players. I mean, the fact that you could watch a Facebook Live event for free and be sweating from, 1,500 miles away from the nearest player, minimum, It was fantastic. The event was much needed. We needed something like this in pool. I still want to see somebody battle back and forth in a safety battle, you know, on the hill at the Texas Open or whatever the first tournament is coming up. But this was a nice breath of fresh air. It really got to see a lot of the top players again playing in some battles, and it was great. It was fun. If you haven't checked it out yet, all the videos are up on their Facebook page. You can still go back and watch all of them. And I guess, David Al-Kaidi, thank you for putting the show on with your One Sports TV, and I had a fantastic time watching it. All right, so I guess now, with our shout-outs out of the way, we can actually go into talking about that event. Okay, so we got to get all the fluffing out of the way. So, I gave my shout-out. I thought it was a great event. I'm sure... Jay, you were watching a lot of it. I'm sure you liked it as well, right?
Yeah. You know, overall, it was an unbelievable event. I shouldn't say unbelievable. It was a good event during COVID. I've said this before. I'm not a huge fan of ghost events, but this is the first ghost event that I did really get into. A lot of it had to do with the production value, as well as who was in it. I like the shorter races. I like the players that were involved in it. I like the commentary. You know, the production was spot on, especially for being the first major event for One Pool, One Sports TV to do. David Al-Kaidi and crew, and I thought it was. They definitely had some bumps in the road. I know we're going to talk about, but definitely. During our time of COVID where we don't have events and we're sweating matches online, I thought it was a very good event.
Yeah. And Rob, you actually watched some of this, which for anybody out there that listens to the show, you know how surprising it is to get him to watch
it. It's summer in Wisconsin. Are you kidding me? You're indoors. It's 80 outside and sunny and you're watching pool.
This is the exact type of format that you love, though.
I did. I said, okay, Rob, get ready. Watch this or I'm pulling the trigger.
Well, this is the exact style of event that you like to watch, though, right?
This particular event, what intrigued me about it was that there was actually some intrigue with what is the player going to do. They have a little option at the beginning of this game. Do they want to make that 10 ball at the end of the game worth 6 points or one? And that's kind of a pressure imploder, you could say. Otherwise, there's not a lot of pressure in this kind of format. But that whole thing, you know, especially if they, you know, if their ego is up there, and most of the great pool players certainly have egos. So I really like that part of this format. It was great. The scoring aspect, you know, and I thought I had a phone call from a friend. After this, who said about the pattern racking thing, and I don't know if this is the time to interject this or not, but as long as I'm gabbing, I will. He said to me they should have it a specific pattern for 10 ball every time.
Yeah, and we'll cut it off there because we're going to have this discussion in a couple seconds.
Okay, sure. So, as far as what fun pool to watch. And it was great to watch these pros make mistakes with ball in hand. I mean, these are guys that don't make many mistakes at all. Now they get ball in hand, they make a mistake on a second ball, third ball, or whatever. Sure. I mean, that was, for the every average day player out there, pretty encouraging to watch that.
Yeah. And so I guess let's give the placings. So, of course. For anybody who's watching around yesterday, Eklanti Kachi ends up pulling the win over Fedor, which was my exact prediction. You remember that, Rob? I predicted the entire thing right, except for the Elbin and Jeffrey one, although we'll get into that in a little bit.
Well, without the disqualification,
yes,
your prediction would have been boo-boo, buddy.
Well, it was dead on. What are you talking about? I predicted Jeffrey Bologna to lose to Eklanti anyways.
Yeah, the coin landed on its edge. That's what happened with your prediction. Yeah.
So
flipped it on its edge. I didn't call that.
So Eklanti Kachi wins over Fedor. Third place, I guess third, fourth place, goes to Elbin Ocean and then Tyler Steyer. And then fifth through eighth goes to Damianos. I am not even going to try and pronounce the last one. Jeffrey DeLuna. Thorsten Holman, and Nayuki Oi. So that's as far as we'll go back for this. Now, let's get into the fun drama of this, because as we just kind of led into it, I'm going to try to, and you guys can tell me how good I am at doing the exactly neutral part of this. I'm going to try and give what happened and only what happened. Really? Try to not let my bias come in. So Jeffrey DeLuna is playing Albin Ocean. Jeffrey DeLuna is pattern racking. He is setting the balls in the same exact spot every single time. And about halfway through the set, I find this out later on, but Albin Ocean actually said something to the commentators privately that he is pattern racking. Margaret Fefalova calls him on it and tells him, you have to change the balls. So he did. He basically took two balls, transitioned them out from the bottom of the rack, moved them up one position higher, and moved those two balls down to the bottom of the rack, and did that, I believe, for two racks in a row, and then he switched back to his original rack again. So still pattern racking by definition. And then he basically goes on a rotation of a few different balls, moving spots, but essentially the same idea with the pattern racking. Margaret eventually calls him out on it again and tells him that he has to do it again. So twice in the match, she tells him that he has to change his rack. He does. He complies every time and then just changes it basically how it was asked to, and then ends up winning the match. Albin Ocean decides that he doesn't like it and leaves the chat before, I guess, the match was really even done. The last rack, as Jeffrey, or I guess I should say, Albin Ocean breaks and scratches on the fourth tiebreaker / sudden death, whatever you want to call it, and then turns his camera off and leaves. About 4.5 hours later, an official announcement came out that Jeffrey DeLuna would have to play the third set of the match, the third point of the match, I should say, or forfeit. He elects to forfeit the match because he does not think that he should have to replay the third set or the third point. Okay, so that is where we're going to start. So that, well, I shouldn't even say that's where we're going to start. That's the context for that. And you guys can let me know. Did I give a pretty decent? Is there anything else you want to add to that?
No, you're spot on.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a good rundown, Nate.
So then the next match was between Eklanti Kachi and Damianos. And this was 0-2, but the score was not anywhere close to as blown out as it looks for that. And I'm going to give the rundown on this one as well, because we're going to be talking about both matches kind of together yet separately, because I think that they were consecutive matches, and you really can't untie the matches from each other with the decision that was made. So, I'll try to give as unbiased as description as I can. In the first point, or the first set, whatever you want to call it, Eklanti Kachi, while being down 38-28 and the break advantage, or the break, he broke first. So he was a break ahead, and he was down 10 points. He made one ball on the break and had a shot on his one ball, so he took the shot on the one ball, going for 15 points. During this, he bumped the three ball with his backhand on the, not the follow-through, but the takeaway. So after he actually made contact with the cue ball, he kind of backed his hand up and bumped the three ball. Then he ends up completing the runout for 15 points. He does not call the foul on himself. By the rules, it is all ball fouls, double WPA rules. So that is all ball fouls. Any foul, any bumped ball is a foul. So then he finishes out the run for 15 points, which makes the score now 43-38, with Eklanti having one more break. Then, this is something that hasn't been talked about on Facebook, but it definitely happened, and you can see it on live video. In later on, at 1 hour and 1 minute exactly, basically, Eklanti is removing the magic rack and bumps the 10 ball with the magic rack, and the 10 ball rocks. That is the biggest. That is such a nitty thing to have to point out, and it's really not even that big of a deal. I would never have called this or anything like that. I mean, it's just a tiny little mistake. It's kind of whatever, but it happened. It happened in the context of bumping the three ball already. So I don't think you can separate that and just say, well, whatever. So on that rack, he actually takes ball in hand and runs out again. So now we have 25 points that are potentially up in the air as questionable as to whether or not he should have gotten them. And I shouldn't say 25 because he already had 2 points down, or he had 1 point down on the first rack, and I think he had 2 points down on the second one. So instead of getting 3 points, he got 25 points for both of those. Damianos, in between the first and second point, he had, for anybody who was watching live, he had a crowd that was there, and they were, he's kind of a, he lives on an island in Greece, and from what the commentators would say, he's kind of a legend there. I mean, he's almost this deity on this island as a pool player, because he's, you know, he is their representative. He is their best player. And so every time you saw him get out or make a good shot, you could actually hear in the background applause. And I thought that was kind of a cool touch. But one of his those people that were watching and cheering him on actually saw the bump. And if you were watching live again, you knew that there was a pause in between the first and second set. And part of that, I think, was because Eklanti's camera was having a malfunction again. So... And then Damianos just took a little bit of a break. And we were under the impression it was going to be 2 to 3 minutes, maybe five at the most. And it ended up turning into being, was it about a 15-minute break, something like that? Do you remember how long it was, Jay?
Yeah, it was at least 15 minutes because I was in chat asking if it was halftime or if it was commercial break. Because, the Super Bowl halftime is less time than Jumpmaster took on his.
Well, and I actually was talking to Damianos about that later on, and Damianos was basically, so what was happening behind the scenes was Damianos was basically saying, what about this three ball, what's going on? And that was not just them not being at the table. He was actually discussing with the promoters, and the promoters at that point in time had actually admitted that the foul had happened. They had saw it, and they had acknowledged that it happened. I don't think that there was any discussion about the template bumping the 10 ball. And I don't even know if that one actually is a foul. I think it would be by all ball fouls technically. But then again, well, regardless, they were made aware on the spot when it happened, from my understanding anyways. So that was what the discussion was happening there. They decided that they were going to continue it on from there, as is, no foul. Now, Damianos afterwards was not happy with this. He kind of called it out. He is a little bit of sour grapes. He did it as respectfully as he could have, but to me anyways, it just came off as sour grapes. The call was made at the time, and he knew that the call was made at the time. And that's just how it came off to me. Okay, so I think that that's pretty much the context there. There was no go back and replay that first point in that set. So is there anything else you guys want to add, or did I get kind of the context of that one?
You got it spot on.
Okay. So, Jay, you can take it away first if you would like. What were your thoughts on the two calls?
All right. Well, initially when one sport came out and disqualified Jeffrey, I was very happy with that decision. However, my DM on my Instagram blew up instantly, and I was told that there was multiple matches in which pattern racking was happening, and I was given instances of it. Yeah. So I went back and looked at,
just to jump in real quickly, by my count there were at least six players that had enough evidence in my mind to say that they were pattern racking. So I counted at least six players.
Right. So once I saw that, and then I thought about what happened with Tachi, and then I got a DM. I mentioned this last night in my live show, and I'm really torn on this. And, you know, is it sour grapes? I don't like the way that I don't like the way that Jumpmaster did it live, but I don't know if it's sour grapes because, you know, they're competitive players and they're playing to win. And if you see something wrong, you gotta point it out. And Kachi moved the three ball. So, you know, it wasn't like it was slightly. You could see very easily that the three ball moved. There was no question that the three ball moved. Now, me personally, and I said this, is if it was me, I wouldn't have called it on myself. That's just who I am. I mean, every player is different. You know, if I'm playing for money, I'm not calling it on myself. I want my opponent to call it. But once my opponent calls it, I'm going to say, yeah, I did it. You know what I mean? I'm going to man up for it. Here's what I don't like. I don't like that one sports made a disqualified one player, but then made no ruling on another player. I don't like that. It's shady. Here's another angle that I'm going to give you. And I talked about this last night with Mike, and this bothers me. I don't know that this is just an idea, a thought. Somebody gave it to me. Alvin is a predator player. Tachi is a predator player. It was a predator event. In both cases, the ruling went towards the predator player.
And more context there. Yeah. Sorry, and more context there. Damianos, I am not sure who he plays for, but Jeffrey DeLuna is a Mez player. So neither, more specifically, neither of the other two players were Predator players as well. Just I wanted to throw that in there as well.
Yeah. So I don't know that it happened because of Predator players. You could easily say that it happened because they were top tier players. Well-known players. I mean, you could say it that way. Top 10 players, you could say it that way. The Scrimmage Cup players, you could say it that way. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you could say it. I just don't like that a ruling was made one way and there was no ruling the other way. That being said, this was their first event and they shouldn't be shot for it.
No, they don't have to walk the plank for this one.
right. I'm not. So if this happened, if this was a major promoter and this happened and it was 5 years in, I would be crushing them all week.
Yeah.
But this is the first major event. There's going to be growing pains. You're going to learn a lot of things from this. And ultimately, my personal opinion, they got to get the pass. That's they were wrong, but it wasn't, it wasn't a felony. It was a misdemeanor.
Yeah.
Right.
And I agree with that. So I guess my takeaways from this is going to be, I think
players
that
they will have chances.
Yeah. By my count, there were six players at least where, like I said, I saw enough evidence to say that they were pattern racking. It's hard to tell for the first round, right? Because you may only have, and if you lose 2-0, you may only have 10 breaks. And that's probably a pretty good body of evidence. But if they're cycling between two racks where, maybe they're just rotating two balls each time to make it look like you're not pattern racking, it's hard to tell whether they are or not. At least to where I'm going to feel comfortable saying that they are. So I'm just going to look at the six players. I'm not going to name them or anything like that, but I saw six players who were regularly pattern racking. Jeffrey DeLuna was one of them, and he readily admitted to being one of them. He had never denied at any point in time, even when he was called out by Margaret, as to whether or not he was pattern racking. So that's where I'm going to start this. Jeffrey did pattern rack. He readily admitted to pattern racking. He had been doing it for 3 matches at that point, up until that point, and even to the point where there was discussions by the commentator saying that Jeffrey DeLuna actually has this breakdown so well where he's controlling the one ball up until the point where he's actually having to take a combination on the one or the four or the one and the five ball because it was ending up the same exact way every single time. The commentators from the beginning were acknowledging this and they were kind of participating in and using it as a predictor of what's going to happen to come. So to say that this is the first time that you've seen this is just silly to me. With that being said, I'm not trying to like sell out the commentators that called it out because he should have been called out on it sooner. If you're going to enforce the rules of no pattern racking, don't do it in the third match when he's got it down so dominatingly to where Albin Ocean could run a 15, a 10, a 15 and still lose in sudden death. I mean, don't call it when he's so dominating and so good at it that he is just kind of blowing out everybody else. So that is my first problem is you had a body of evidence saying that he's been doing this for three matches and you didn't do anything about it. And why didn't they do anything about it? Because they never had a referee, right? So you can't, and you and Mike had talked about this last night, and I thought you guys handled it perfectly well. You cannot expect the commentators to be a referee. You just can't do it. Their job is to commentate, not to call balls and strikes. So to have a ruling where you can't pattern rack, but have nobody enforcing any of the rules, you're setting yourself up for failure immediately. So what does that mean going forward? Well, it's an easy fix. All you have to do is just have somebody there who's watching. Have somebody who's refereeing. That's easy as it is. And have a set rules where if the referee missed something that's blatant, because the ball clearly moves in Eklanti's game. It clearly rocks the three ball. But it's not exactly easy to see in real time. In fact, I was partaking in the comments like crazy, and I only saw one person that saw it. And they pointed it out, and I never went back and looked at it. I just, you know, whatever. So it's not exactly easy to see. You got to have an infrastructure in place of what's going to happen if you miss a call that you go back and see later on. That solves that problem basically immediately. Now, as far as the Jeffrey DeLuna thing, I heard you and Mike talk about this yesterday, and you kind of scoffed at the idea. But have a set pattern rack. Have a spot where every single ball goes into place. And you guys didn't like it because you kind of said, well, the player's going to figure it out. And to my response to that is, yeah, so what? The best players are always going to be the people that work at the break, right? So the best players in the world right now are the players who their break is dominating. And that's because they work on it religiously. So if you want to take 16 to 35 hours and just work on breaking this pattern, this set pattern, you've put more work in than your opponents and you deserve to do better. That's how I look at it. So if you have, you know, 1, 8, 4, 3, 6, whatever it is across the board, and that's how you have to rack every single time, the people who are going to do well are the people who have that figured out. And the people who have that figured out are going to be the people that work at it. So I have no problem with somebody getting punished for not working hard at figuring something out. And
isn't that just pattern racking then?
Yeah.
Yes, but everybody has the same exact setup. So yes, it is a pattern rack. It's a set pattern, but everybody has the opportunity to see it well in advance, and they have the ability to go back and actually figure it out, right? You have the ability that everybody else does to practice it, figure it out, learn it, and then excel at it. As opposed to this, where anybody can rack any way that they want, and how do you tell whether or not they're actually pattern racking or if it's random, and the balls just keep ending up in the same general areas as is?
I would just say rack them any pattern you want.
well, that's what happened here, and this is why we had the discussion with Jeffrey. So, I wouldn't mind. I would love to hear your response to that, or what your thoughts are on it. More, maybe a little bit more in depth.
I think coming up with the same whack every time is just another form of pattern racking, and they're just going to figure it out. I think there's no surefire way around this, but I think the best thing to do is to come up with rules that further explain what is expected of the rack and then enforce it. There's in this event, there was 31 matches, and they were all over the world because of COVID. You know, you can't have referees. But I think you have to have somebody who is not a commentator, who is an official, who calls people out on when rules are broken, or at least rules that they see that are broken. So I think it's just a better explanation of what is expected from racking. And, you know, players are not accountable, not just Jeffrey DeLuna, but all players. Because you're right, there were many other players that this happened to. So, you know, the thing is, and I've seen this, you know, I've traveled to a lot of tournaments around the country, and I watch a lot of events online, and for whatever reason, players are afraid to call out other players. I don't know if it's, you know, they feel like snitches, or they feel like they're going to be called sour grapes or whatever. And I just don't understand it, because they're playing for money. You know, they're playing for income. And if I see something wrong, I don't care what you say about me. I'm calling, you know, if you do something wrong, I'm calling it out. So, and I don't know why players don't do that. If they're too friendly with each other, it could be a lot of different reasons. I don't know. You know, pool players are introverts by the most part anyway. And maybe that might be it, but, you have to call it out. But in this case, you have to have someone who is a rules official who points out when there's a mistake.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I guess just to clear up mine or my overall thoughts on this, I think and I was talking to Jeffrey DeLuna afterwards as well, and he readily admitted to me that he was absolutely pattern racking. He wasn't trying to hide it. I just think, and this is my broader point. If you're going to enforce it on Jeff and going to basically say you have to replay that point, I think you have to go back to Eklanti Kachi. I guess let me start it here. I don't care that they did that. I don't care if they wouldn't have done it. I just want to see consistency. So if they're not going to do it with Jeffrey DeLuna and Albin Ocean, I'm perfectly okay with them not doing it with Eklanti Kachi and Damianos. If they are going to do it with Albin Ocean and Jeffrey DeLuna, I want to see them also do it with Eklanti Kachi. You said this last night, you don't really buy into conspiracies very much. I don't either. I think the decision that was made with Eklanti and Damianos was made on the spot, and it was made in between the first and second point, or set, however you want to call it. That decision was made then and there on the spot, and they can't go back on it later on and say, well, I know this was our ruling earlier. This is our ruling now. Go back and play it. So I think that was the reason why they didn't call it with the Eklanti and Damianos, and they didn't have that same luxury, or they didn't have that same set-in-stone ruling with Jeffrey and Albin, so they were able to go back on it later on. And I think that ultimately is the reason why they went back on him and not on the other one. But if you're not going to let the fans know that that actually happened, because I don't think that's public knowledge that there was actually a discussion that was had in between the first and second point of Eklanti and Damianos' match. I don't think that that's public knowledge. If you're not going to say that that's the reason why you didn't go back on Kachi, I think you cannot definitely go back on Jeffrey and Albin. I think that's just a terrible look, like you said. It looks like you're favoring Predator players, and it just... They got called out a lot on Facebook, and a lot of it I think was unfair. There's a lot of people that are saying it's a clown show and that it's just a stupid event and they're not going to give any credibility to it going forward. And that's just, I mean, I think that's just way too far. It was a mistake that I think that they made, and I think they're going to learn from it going forward. And I just don't think it's, like you said, it's a misdemeanor, not a felony. It's not a throw the book at them kind of mistake.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, people like that, I don't even pay attention to. You know, there's so much hate in the world, especially in pool. You know, so much hate. Everybody's an expert, but nobody does anything. So, you know, if you don't like it, then, you know, I have a very harsh response. You don't like it, don't watch. Because those of us who do understand the sport and support it 100%, we understand mistakes are going to be made. Mistakes are going to be made. You know, in the end, maybe they should have done nothing. Maybe they were better off doing nothing. But whatever, they did do something. You know, it's easy for us to be Monday morning quarterbacks now. You know, that's what we do in media, you and I, Nate, and Rob. But, you know, they'll learn from this. And I guarantee you they won't make this mistake again.
No,
you
know, I know.
Think about it. They won't make it again.
I was in a position for about 10 years of being involved in running a large state tournament every year. And every single year, there, you know, there's four or five of us kind of would get together along with the tournament director and make decisions like this on the spot. In every single tournament, every single year, that you could not go back on. You just, we, the five of us would vote, you know, the 3-2, which way we go on this. So sometimes these decisions, you know, at the time they're important. You want to do the right thing, but there's going to be somebody involved in that decision that's going to be on the wrong side of your decision.
Yeah, and this is why I actually wanted you
to be happy about it. Yeah,
this is actually why I wanted you to go last, Rob, because you actually do have a significant. You were the president of the Wisconsin BCA several years, so that's why I wanted you to go last on this one, because you have the most real life experience of actually being on the other side of this. So, I guess I would like to have your thoughts on what happened now.
Well, this is going to come up. Now, the next one's going to be better the next time they do this. And this format's going to stick around even after the pandemic. And they're going to refine this type of format to even where maybe the tables could be the same, the pocket size could be the same, the balls could be the same, so that there's a lot more definitive surrounding requirements for, and along with rules. I may refine these rules a little bit more. Sometimes less rules is better than more. If, you know, rather than we had a league one time where we just got rid of a rule. And after that, we didn't have a problem because there was so much argument about the rule. So, you know, there's some things they can do to tweak. So it's too bad it happens because there is a downside. It's the person who lost. The person who maybe had a chance to win or could have got on and won now, and we'll never know that. But it'll get better. These kinds of things that happen in a tournament, you can't go back. If it was the end of the tournament, maybe you could do something about it. But after the decision is made, it's too late.
And one thing I did want to say as well is I think that Margaret Feffalova, during the commentator, it's not her job to call this out. With that being said, I think she handled it exactly perfect. She gave a warning initially, and then made him change his rack twice. He obliged both times. But she handled it about as good as you could have possibly handled it. She played referee very well. In the next set, and I'm not going to say the commentator, because I thought he handled it exactly wrong. I mean, terribly wrong. And I think that was another reason why this match was actually handed over to Eklanti.
Yeah.
He actually...
I'm going to back on that a little, Nate, and I'll tell you why when you're done.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm not going to say the other commentator, but Damiano's actually broken and made, I want to say, two, maybe three balls, and had a dead straight in shot on the one ball. And the commentator afterwards told him, you pattern racked, re-rack and break again. And then Damiano's, of course, broke dry. If you're going, so this one actually got me even more fired up than the Jeffrey DeLuna one, because if you're going to call him for a pattern rack and you're not going to give him the opportunity to change it, you cannot go back and say, redo it. You give him a zero on the spot, or you don't call it to begin with. You called him for a violation. The violation does not say you get one more shot at it. If you violate the rules, you get a zero for that rack. The fact that he gave him another opportunity is the silliest call I think I've ever heard when it comes to something like this. If you're going to make the call, stick to your guns and give him a zero. That's the correct ruling. It's not very popular, but it's not very popular to call him after the break anyway. So if you're going to do it right. That's how I feel on that one. And maybe you had, and Rob, you said you wanted to address that one, so go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish off.
That's it. That's all I got. I mean, I think it's absolutely silly that if you're gonna call a rules violation to try to skirt the middle of the road, to try to make it slightly more popular with not only Damiano's but the fans, if you're going to call the rule, enforce the outcome. That's all I have to say about it. Give them a zero.
Can I add something?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
As much as I love Margaret, it's not the commentator's job to point out.
Oh, that's my point. That's what I was going to talk about. Yeah. Go ahead, Jay. Go ahead. Finish.
It's not her job to do that. That's number one. And if she is going to do it, then she's got to do it every time. But the problem is she wasn't the commentator every time.
Correct.
So if she's not going to do it, if she's not going to be there every time, then somebody has to do it. So you can't change the rules mid-tournament. And that's what happened here. So that's really, you know, this is the beginning of the end right here, is that Margaret is making, you know, is piping up and taking the role of referee or official, when she shouldn't be.
Yeah. But let me run this by you guys, and this is my pushback. And we've all experienced this, watching a pro football game on Sunday. And everybody who's watching it sees a foul committed someplace on the field. But none of the refs see it. But the commentator sees it and says something about it, and then the cameras shoot in, get it on, get it, and it's all blowed up. And my feeling is, I like the fact that the commentator did that, that he just didn't blow it off and not say anything about it, that he brought it to the forefront. And because if my wife and I are sitting watching and we both see a foul committed, a hold or a roughing thing or whatever, or an interference or something else, and nobody says anything about it, not none of the refs, not none of the commentators, we're looking at each other like, well, what did we just see? So that's my pushback on that. I am disappointed if I don't hear from the commentators if I see as a fan something committed.
Well, let me address that, because I wasn't clear. I have no problem with him making that call because I think that it was the right one. My problem with it is if you're going to make the call, enforce the rule that it's supposed to happen from it. If you're going to call it after he already breaks and not give him the opportunity to change it on the spot, then the correct ruling there is to give him a zero for a rules violation. It does not say anywhere in the rules that if you make a rules violation, you get to redo it. It's less popular because he made three balls and had pretty much a guaranteed 15 for a player of that caliber. You're taking,
I'm not pushing back on that.
And if you know that if he broke and got a zero, they wouldn't have told him to redo it again. So that's where you take this gray area, this ambiguity outside of the rules. If you're going to call that rules violation, again, like Jay said, you're a commentator, not an official, but I think that basically, if you're still going to call it, you have to give a zero. You have got to give a zero to the player at that point. You cannot give them the opportunity to re-break. It's probably not a popular opinion to take, and it's probably not a popular decision to enforce, but it's still, I think, very clearly the right decision. And maybe you guys want to argue with that, but I think if you're going to call a rules violation, you have got to enforce a zero there, not a re-break.
I agree with you.
Yeah, I got to agree with that, Nate.
Yeah, and it's not going to be popular. The chat room is going to light up, but I think they're going to light up for you calling it afterwards and not giving them an opportunity, not because the ruling is wrong. I think anybody who's fair-minded and is able to look at it soberly is going to agree that that is going to be the right call.
Yeah, doing things over is, I don't know, it's kind of it's like a draw. Okay, nobody won. we're going to start over. I've never liked that. Sometimes it's a solution that appeases the competitors. That's about it. That's the only upside of it.
Yeah. So I guess at this point, I think we've discussed them pretty well. Is there anything else either of you would like to say about it?
No, I think you got it.
Okay. So I think we could take...
I like it.
Yeah.
For sure.
I think we had a good discussion on it. I think maybe what we can do now is kind of go back to the 50,000-foot view of this event. And I'll start it off. It's a lot easier maybe to even just tell you what I'm thinking as opposed to just trying to say it out loud. I think that there's a lot of things that they need to do going forward to make this event as great as it was for the first 3 days of the event. Right, because I was on the edge of my seat sweating all these matches, and you know it was fantastic. One, you got to have a ref. You have got to have a referee watching the stream from start to finish. If you want to incorporate that into your scorekeeper, do that. I don't care. But I think you have to have a set referee that is going to watch so that you have the commentators commentating, you have the players playing. And,
oh, the booth.
Yes.
The guy in the booth.
Yes, you can't expect, you can't expect, so the players are expected to have the balls racked and ready before their opponent finishes, right? So you can't just wait for, you know, Eklanti to run out 15 points and then you start racking your balls. Your job as a player is to have the rack ready and have everything in place so that once that your opponent is done, you're able to just go over there and start shooting as well. That's what you want for the fan engagement, so there's no dead time. Well, if you're going to have that, the players can't call fouls on their opponents. You just can't do it. I mean, that happened right away in Eklanti's game where he bumped the three ball. It was his very first shot after the break. He took a little bit of time to think about it. So I think Damiano's had enough time to rack the balls and look at the stream. But what if he just gets up there and fires it right away without even thinking? Damiano's is still probably racking the balls. So you can't expect him to be able to call a foul on somebody when he has other responsibilities to do. The commentators are supposed to be commentating. You can't expect them to enforce rules while commentating. The scorekeeper's job is to do scorekeeping. So maybe they're updating the score while, you know, Eklanti's firing that ball. I think you have to have, regardless, I think you have to have a set person in place watching the games and looking for rules violations as a full-time position. I think you just have to do that if you're going to have this event going forward. And
you know what I thought was a really cool thing about the whole event was it's not rehearsed. But there was no lag time between, you know, one of the players would get done with their game and then the next player's breaking. Yeah, there they are.
Exactly. Boom. Yeah, which is
really orchestrated well, that part of that.
Which is going into, you can't expect a player to call fouls on their opponent when they have other responsibilities in between racks.
Yeah.
So, and then, like I said, I think they have to have a set pattern for the breaking. And if the players figure it out and they're, you know, they're making three
balls.
Good for
them.
Yeah, that's exactly how
I figured it out. They've worked hard at it.
Yeah, they put the time and an effort in, and you know that's the reason why they're doing better than the other players, because they put the work and effort into it. So I'm never going to say, well, you shouldn't benefit because you worked too hard and the rest of the people didn't. So I like to have a set pattern rack in place, and I think they got to have a referee watching all of the matches, and I think that's going to fix everything. And I cannot wait for the next time they put one of these things on. Especially if it's still during COVID and we have nothing else. I mean, I just can't wait. So, I don't know. Jay, you want to take it from there?
I'm right there with you. I look forward to the next one. Players-wise, I mean, you couldn't ask for a better mix of players.
Yeah, you had a perfect combination of top players plus players that are coming through the lines. I like that a lot of players got to be on that stage with those players and we got to learn their names. Sorry, I'm not trying to cut you off, but I think that's cool.
He even had some females in there. I'd like to see a few more females in there.
I think they had three.
But I love the event overall. Again, a COVID event. You know, would I watch it, you know, when COVID's over? No, probably not. But we're in special times now, and who knows how long COVID's going to last. I mean, we could be doing this for two more years. Who knows?
Yeah,
so,
theoretically.
Kudos to One Sports TV for doing this and the commentators for a first event. I think, you know, putting aside the issues of the rule violations, put that aside for a moment. They did a great job. It was a lot of fun to watch.
What would you think of a match on the same table between two players playing with the same point system, the same format, not from different cities or countries or whatever, but just sitting in the same
tournament.
Pool on the same table. What's that?
Yeah, I mean,
you go to 60, you do the same thing.
That'd be interesting. I don't think it'll ever take off because I don't think it's better than watching the grind back and forth. But I think it'd be interesting.
I don't know.
Well, and Jay, maybe you want to take this on as well before I give my idea on that, but. Well, let's let Jay finish out first, and then maybe we can talk about this later on, because I think that's an interesting thought.
I do like Rob's idea. It's one of those things that, you know, on paper probably looks good, but you have to do it and see what it looks like. What I do like about one thing that I do like about this, we brought this up last night. Mike DeShane and I brought this up. We were talking about long races. One thing that I did like about this is the short races. I liked that it was the 60 points. I liked that there was a little bit of drama. I liked that there was some matches that hit, you know, that were tied at 60 and we had some extra inning matches. You know, there was drama with this. And, you know, maybe just because we haven't had any drama lately, you know, we missed the U.S. Open and missed some big event.
The Whirlpool Masters.
Whirlpool and
Super Billiards
like
Expo.
That. Yeah. And we haven't had any drama to sweat that, you know, that this was something fun for us to get into. So I'm still watching cash matches every week, you know, from Asia and Philippines, but not always the same. But I think it's a great event. I look forward to seeing it again. I hope they do it again soon. Hopefully, they'll get more money. That was the one thing that I thought was disappointing for the players.
The what?
I'm always the player's side. I thought the money was a little weak. for the amount of
okay.
Yeah, it was. There was.
I didn't even know anything about the money.
And I can actually give the breakdown of that because I have it. I have it up online here. So let me. I know.
I was interested in that though. I just didn't look for it.
Yeah, let me.
Curious. That different than interested?
Yeah. So first prize for this was 1,500 euros. Second place was 800 euros. Third, fourth was 400 euros. Fifth through eighth was 200 euros, and ninth through 16th was 100 euros. So
what's the equivalent to dollars?
It's about 1.25.
Okay, so pretty close.
Yeah, yeah, that's so not enough. Maybe $1,800, something like that. $1,900 yeah. probably. So yeah, a total breakdown, I guess, of about 2,400. I guess maybe $5,000, about a little, or I should say about I think of about 6,000 pounds. So I mean, I don't know if that changes your opinion on that. And actually, I don't even know if there was an entry fee in this. I assume there probably was an entry fee.
Well, look, entry fee or not entry fee? I mean, let's
for professional players, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's $1,500 yeah. first place. You think
the bar down the block here last Saturday had more money in a tournament than that?
Think about this. You think Kachi cares about $1,500 for first place?
No.
He doesn't care.
No, he doesn't.
Okay. So was this when you look at the amount of sponsors there were? I don't believe, and this is just my guess. I don't know anything, but I don't believe the commentators were paid, right?
I commentated a match and was not paid, but I didn't. I also didn't ask to be paid. I just I volunteered. So I did Ralph Souquet's and Thorsten Holman's match, and I was not paid. But I, like I said, I didn't ask to be paid. So maybe Margaret. I could reach out and ask Margaret, but no. Actually, I did talk to Margaret about this. She said she was volunteering her time for it. So
okay. So there was no TV production because it was the players' phones, and it was on right. Facebook.
Right.
So what costs were involved? So if the players made $5,000, how much did quote unquote the company make? Because I got to believe that more than $5,000 was paid into this, right? When you have that many, I mean, when you look at the screen, there was I don't know 10 sponsors.
Yeah,
there was a lot.
Yeah. I'm looking at the. I'm looking at their Facebook page, and I'm seeing they had Predator, of course, that sponsored it. Starline, some nine ball, I don't know what that is. DS Billiards, the World Pool Billiards Association, the One Sports, well, that's them. Poison, Echo Tisa, seven sponsors.
And then what does? And then you know, I'm not criticizing here, but think of me as a lawyer for the players here. One Sports builds up, should in theory, build up a tremendous following after an event like this, right? So that's, they have a huge upside here, One Sport. So, and you're telling me $1,500 first place? Come on. That's ridiculous.
That is pretty chintzy.
Yeah, each video got... generally speaking, I think each video got about 25,000 views, somewhere around there. Some a little
really?
Bit more, some a little less.
Yeah. So think about how much money now let's think about this. Now these videos are on YouTube. Think about how much money they're going to make on YouTube over the course of the life of these videos. So, here's what I think. I think the Predator guys, again, my opinion, I don't know anything. I think the Predator guys, Predator players, that's what I mean by Predator guys, Predator players were probably in many ways told they had to play this event because of the Predator event, and it gets the Predator name out there, and times are tough
right
economically, right?
Yep, I think that's dead on right there.
What's that?
I think that's dead on right there. I think that they probably did leverage their signing of the players to kind of not forcing them to play in it, but telling them that they're probably going to have to, right?
Or ask them that it's good enough.
Like you don't have to play in this, but you're going to play in this kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think when you look at who is in this tournament from Predator, I think they're told they're playing. And I think the players that are not from Predator are the players that, are just looking to play.
Yeah.
I think there wasn't any, I don't want to say any lower tier players, but I mean, if somebody comes up with a big win here, you know, let's just say this, and I'm not knocking her, but let's say Margaret wins this, you know, she's happy she's winning this. It's not about the money at that point. You know, she just beat all the boys, you know? So it's a shame that it's $1,500. We should be happy that it happened. We should be upset for the players that it's only $1,500. Because I could tell you right now, perhaps you don't give two shits that it was $1,500. I don't know if I'm allowed to say shits on your show, but I'm telling you.
You are. No, I am an explicit podcast.
It's okay with me.
Yeah.
Nate edits out. You can't believe how much stuff Nate's edited out of this podcast that I've said.
Well, Rob doesn't know any of this because he's not supposed to be listening to the podcast. So I think he's lying to me when he says he doesn't listen. I really like the event. I hope that they do a lot more of these. So that will wrap up our discussion there. We can now move on to our one upcoming event that we'll cover very briefly. All right, and it has now been announced that there are two events coming up. It is going to be a one pocket matchup between Roberto Gomez and Chip Compton. We discussed this a little bit last week, but we didn't get Jay's perspective because he wasn't here. So, Jay, if you wouldn't mind, or if you want to, I guess, give your perspective on that match.
I like both players very much. I know them both pretty well. Roberto, I know very well. It's a good matchup. If I had to pick a player between the two, they both play strong. I don't like what Roberto's doing lately. I'm going to pick Chip Compton to win this event.
So you're kind of on your island over here with picking Chip. We all picked. So Melina, Mike, myself, and Rob all picked Roberto last week. So you're kind of off on your island there.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Melina picked Melina. Roberto. Melina can pick. Melina's got good picks.
Yeah.
Melina. Yeah. Well, I'm gonna go with Chip.
Hey, I can dig it. I can dig it.
Yeah.
I've been
Melina knows his stuff, that kid. I call him a kid because I'm an old guy, but man, Molina's on point.
Yeah, I think his prediction was 24-19. My prediction was 24-17. And did you ever give a pick, Rob? What was your pick?
Roberto.
Well, what do you have for a score? Yeah.
24-21.
Okay. Are you comfortable enough to give yourself a prediction, Jay?
I don't like to pick scores. I just like to pick winners. So next week, I'm going to look like a hero.
Yeah.
Well, I hope not, because I plan on putting a little bit of money down on this one. So I hope you don't. All right. Well, we'll leave that there. We discussed that one a little bit last week, so we just wanted to get your opinion in on that, Jay. And we can move on to the end of the podcast now. All right, so at the end of the podcast, we generally do a discussion topic. That discussion with the One Sports TV went pretty long, so we'll skip that this week, and we will just go into our tips segment. So, Rob, would you like to go first?
I'm going to give the 8-ball players out there a chance to work their minds a little bit. And one of the things I see a lot, say I'm going to throw a number out there between, let's say, 560 and 610. That, if you're familiar with Fargo rates, those that kind of player is a good strong A player. Somebody on the road probably maybe is going to work his way up to a higher number at some point in time. This is something I see a lot of. When you break a rack of 8-ball, there's either trouble or there's not trouble. If there isn't any trouble, and that does happen in Iraq occasionally, there isn't balls tied up. They basically all go. And you sit there, and there's a million ways to get out. And what happens is the players in that range, they'll quickly pick a way, right or wrong. And then they'll go. They'll press the button and go. And I'll ask these players occasionally if I'm around, if I'm watching them, why did you just do that? You know, because you had a lot more options than that. And believe me, you're not going to get out shooting that ball first that you just shot. I'll tell you right now. And their answer to that was the first thing they thought of. So my tip here today is, if you're not on a shot clock, you don't worry about time. Think in your mind, think this pretty simple one thought. All the balls go, you don't have trouble, you don't have to do anything except make the balls. The order maybe isn't all that, there's a lot of different orders, you can still get out. Think about short and simple. Think about what balls can I shoot where I don't have to knock the cue ball around the table? That in itself, thinking that one thought, easy, simple, restrict ball. You put that all in one soup, and you're going to be able to look at that table from a distance, stand back, and really identify a ball early that's going to get you on a pattern where you're not going to make that mistake and start into a pattern where it's going to be downhill the whole way in that pattern. And Nate, you know this for a fact. You can see that too. So try that. You know, don't just make a decision right away. Do a little bit of analysis with controlling the cue ball will get you out of this rack. What's the shortest amount of distance I can make this cue ball travel and accomplish that? What do you think, buddy?
I think you nailed it. I like to, when I'm working with students who struggle with patterns, what I like to do is I like to say that you cannot use the first pattern. I want you to tell me what your pattern is, and then I want you to come up with your third one. And the third one I always have them use. So their first pattern, I want to hear it. Their second pattern, I want to hear it. But their third pattern is one that I'm going to have them execute. And generally speaking, the second one is the best. The third one is good enough generally to get out. But the first one often, like you said, often the first one that you find is not the best. It's sometimes it's not even runnable. And it depends entirely on the whoever's shooting it, of course, as well.
Right.
So I like that. And so I'm going to add, my tip is going to be adding to that just a little bit, and it's going to be a short one.
A tip addition.
Yes, it's going to add on to yours. When you're picking your patterns, generally speaking, you have, on average, probably 7 balls that you're choosing from, meaning that one of your balls is probably made on the break, or it's just not there. So maybe it's 8, maybe it's 7, maybe it's 6. Maybe if you break like Tyler Steiner, it's 3.
Never mind on that. Open table after the break.
Yeah. So what I like to do when I'm picking my patterns is I actually try to fix as many of those variables as possible, meaning balls. So which ball can you hit a stop shot from easily and have a straight in stop shot 8-ball? So generally speaking, the 8-ball, if it's still hanging around its natural home position on the table, meaning the break didn't move it. Generally speaking, I like to pick balls somewhere over on the side rail, right around the third diamond, because there's a giant area to play positioning into, and you can basically just stop your cue ball to have a straight and 8-ball. So then I fix that ball, and that is going to be ball number 7. Then I try to pick a ball on the table somewhere that you can stop and have a dead end perfect shot on that ball to stop and have a dead end straight 8-ball. And I try to fix my variables on my rack so that you're only working with, and that's kind of as far as I go for those, is I like to fix 2 balls attached to the 8-ball, and then I fix the ball that I'm shooting at first. So then you only have 4 balls that you're really looking at and saying, how can I navigate these 4 balls as opposed to 7 stripes or solids and then the 8-ball? And that really helps to look at these racks a little bit more easily, to where you're only playing position really on from one ball to four other balls. And then you try to pick your best pattern between those four balls as opposed to all seven of them. So that would be my advice, is try to fix two balls at the end of your run out and your first ball, and then play positioning on the four balls in between there. Hopefully that makes sense.
Love it. Nice tip. Or tip addition.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so Jay, are you interested in giving a tip for the fans?
I have a tip.
Perfect.
Pool players, I believe, as a whole, make one big error that they shouldn't. And I'm going to give you guys a pool tip that will change your game. And it doesn't matter if you're new at the game or you're a professional pool player, my pool tip is going to change how you play. Are you excited?
Yes.
You should.
Yeah.
Take 2 weeks off and quit.
No.
Come on, I'm going to pee my pants.
I have found the pool players as a whole make the horrible mistake of never getting a lesson. Spend money on a lesson before you go out and spend $500 or $1,000 on a cue. I've seen so many pool players think that they can buy their game through their product. If you think about sports as a whole, every other sport has a coach or a trainer. You take classes to learn how to drive a car, you take classes to learn how to use a computer, you take classes to learn how to use a fancy camera. So many pool players think, I can just play over and over and over again and I'll get better. And it's a big mistake. Spend $50, spend $100, spend $300. You don't have to do it all at once. You could do it over several months. You could do it over several years. And become a better pool player. Here's a short story I will tell you. I was a horrible golfer. I was an 18 handicap, and I got an opportunity to get a instructor, one of the best instructors where I live in my state, and I went to him religiously for 2 years, and I went from an 18 to essentially a -1. So, I went to him three times a week for 2 years.
How old were you?
I was in my early 30s.
Okay.
And unfortunately, I can't play anymore. I can't play golf anymore.
That's too bad.
Yeah. And this guy changed my life as far as golf. I mean,
yeah.
The biggest thing is how much more I enjoy the game.
And for sure.
It wasn't about because I was beating people.
It's more fun running racks. Yeah. It doesn't matter who you're playing.
But the other thing is I went from playing, crappy golf courses to playing the best courses in the country.
Sure.
Because I was at that ability that I can appreciate what was going on.
Yeah.
So instead of just playing league players, and there's nothing wrong with playing league every week, but there's nothing wrong with playing pros every week, too. And there are so many good instructors wherever you live that you just have to seek out. Find out from your pool room or, you can go on a website. But here's the other thing that I will tell you. When the pool event comes to your neck of the woods, and it might be in your town, or you might have to drive an hour or whatever, and those pros are there for the weekend or for the week or whatever, many of them will do lessons. As much as I like to mess with Bill Strickland, I got a lesson from him, and it's unbelievable. He's unbelievable. If you're in the Northeast, he's at a Sandcastle Billiards in Edison, New Jersey, and he's worth every penny.
Oh, yeah, I bet he is.
The guy, he's a nut job, but the guy can teach us totally business. I'm going to tell every player, no matter what the player is, I had Max on my page, Level 2 Billion Instagram, this past week, and Max has a coach that spends time with him every week. Pool players, pro pool players, have some kind of coach. You should too, as a pool player. That's my tip this week.
And
nice one. I like that tip.
Yeah, and I'll jump in. And pool players don't like spending money, historically speaking. And this is going to be one of those situations where I do want to jump in and say that not just because the player is the best player you've ever seen or the best player in your area does not mean that they're a good teacher. But try to find somebody in your area that is not only knowledgeable but also can teach, because the teaching aspect is going to go a long ways in making you feel like you're getting your money's worth. And this actually is I actually don't know that we've ever had this tip before, but this is a really good one. But if you're tight about it and you don't want to do it, or you're hesitant on doing it, just make sure you get somebody good.
Yeah. And Nate, to your point, I asked one of the best bankers in the world to tell me the secret. And he said, I can't even explain to you how to bank. I said, you're known for banking. You're known. That's like your strongest thing. He goes, but I can't explain. I don't know how to teach it. I know how to do it, but I don't know how to teach it.
Yeah.
So just because somebody's good at it doesn't make them a good teacher. So you want to find somebody who's a good teacher. And just because, here's the other thing. People think that they have to be good pool players. No, they have to be good teachers. They need to know the fundamentals and the things like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And you'll save money in the long run because you'll lose a lot less.
Correct.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, just
there's that aspect.
Yeah, and so this is, and I don't know if you even know that I do this, Jay, but I actually do a free clinic every Monday, and today's Monday, so I will be doing a free clinic tonight. Where
I did that, and I put it on my calendar. Next time I'm in your town, I want to get a free lesson.
You get whatever you want whenever you want, Jay. You are important enough that you can have one whenever you get to Madison or in the area.
Wow.
Well, I'll help you out whatever I can, man. I echo everything that you said, Jay. I think there's a lot of people who are willing to make a $400 investment into a break queue, or even more in some cases, and a $2,000 investment into a pool queue and can't run six balls. It's definitely a better investment to use a house cue off the wall and stroke pure because you got a lesson than buying a $2,000 cue and stroking janky because you don't know how to swing a cue. So I think that is actually a phenomenal, that is definitely a very good. And if you could find somebody who'll do it for free, like me on a Monday, cool. Show up, take advantage of it. But yeah, a lesson is definitely going to help you with your game for sure.
Yeah. But Jay, I got to tell you the other side of the coin. About golf. When I was young, I wasn't too bad of a golfer, maybe in league, like a three. And the local pro there I took a lesson from, I was a seven for 4 years after that. But it was only one lesson. It wasn't three a week for 2 years. It's the same exact thing. I've seen it many times. It's just the first thing they say is, well, that feels really bad.
Yeah, and
real uncomfortable.
Yeah, let me jump in right here, because this is actually something that's been happening with the lessons that I do, is people say, I'll show them what they need to do, and then I'll ask them after about 5 minutes of them working on it, say, you know, how does it feel? And they always respond with the same exact thing. It's weird.
Yeah.
And I respond with perfect. That's the way it's supposed to feel, because it's right and it's different.
Yeah,
and
right.
That's the way it's supposed to feel. Let's keep swinging with it to where it's not weird anymore. So I think,
right.
Yeah, I think that's a good feeling. If you think something's weird and somebody with the correct knowledge tells you that what you're doing is right and it feels weird, that's a good thing. That means you're making progress.
You know what's really fun? I think about teaching is when you find a player who immediately picks up on what you just said.
Yeah,
they don't fumble with it. They grab it and go with it.
But there's nothing wrong with struggling through things either. So
No, not at all. I'm not saying that. But when that time comes, or I said something here about 3 months ago, I saw him a week later, and he was doing exactly what I said. The next time I saw him, and he was better. And he had this kind of look on his face, kind of a confident smile when he looked at me, you know? Like almost, oh, what do you think about the pause. Okay? And I like it, I said.
Yeah.
So that's so cool about it. Well, just telling anybody anything. I'm sure your coach, Jay, he loved you. Your coach.
Jay's gone, by the way.
He's gone?
His phone died. Oh. Here we are, end of another podcast. Jay is not here, but Jay listens to the podcast. I believe he listens to just about every episode, if not every episode. So he'll get to this anyways. And it was an absolute pleasure having Jay join us. I know that in the past I've wanted to get him on for a podcast, and our schedules just don't match up. He's a pretty busy guy. So the fact that he took the time out of this, I really, really appreciate this, Jay. And we'll have you on again.
I do, too. That was extremely educational.
Yeah, I think Jay is so Jay gave me probably the ultimate compliment where I was chatting to him about one of the interviews he did, and I was giving him a little bit of praise, and he's like, you know, that actually means something coming from, and I think what he said was like the master of the interview, and he was referring to me. So that was actually like really, really humbling. But I guess what I was going to say is I expected him to be good on a show like this with us. But I didn't realize he was going to be this good. I mean, he was really insightful. He was really smart. He had great ideas, original ideas, and I think it was great to have him. So I wouldn't mind having him back a little bit more if he's a little bit more willing to do this. I wouldn't mind having him back a couple more times. It was fun to have him onto the show today.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah. Enjoyed it.
Yeah, and Rob, of course, it's always a pleasure having you as well, buddy. All right. Yeah, we were just closing out the show, Jay, and we were talking a bunch of smack about you for abandoning us early.
So, I thought you were still on.
At least I came back.
Yeah, right, at least you came back. Yeah, by accident, I might have left a message on your phone.
So
it was great fun. Yeah,
it was. It was a pleasure.
Yeah.
You can listen back to the podcast on what we said about you after you left. But it was a pleasure to have you on today, and it was good to get your insight on a lot of stuff. So thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's
thanks
just,
for having me, guys.
It's just really a good time for me to have discourse with someone who rubs noses with. You know, all these pros. I mean, when Nate calls me and tells me, Johnny Archer called me again today, I go, oh, geez, Nate, come on. Did you have to tell me that?
Johnny's my buddy now.
Yeah. He calls for advice. I love it.
Johnny's my buddy.
Okay, well, you have a good day out there.
Yeah, all right.
Enjoy Z.
We can let you all get back to your days. I appreciate you guys joining me again, and another episode is done. Thanks again.
Okay, Nate, see ya.
Thank you. Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. If you've liked what you've heard and you want to contribute to the future content that will be made, consider joining the podcast's Patreon at www.patreon.com/queueitup. Becoming a Patreon of the podcast will help to create all of the future content that the podcast will have. Special shout out to Dave Peters, Aaron Taylor, Pete Silsby, Morgan Lupton, Ben Young, Robert Miller, Andy Morse, and Bill Pelham for your generous contributions to the podcast's Patreon. If you ever need any more information on what the Patreon system is or how you can contribute outside of the Patreon, please reach out to the podcast or Nate himself. If you would like to contribute to the podcast for free, consider sharing any podcasts or the podcast page on Facebook itself. Also, leaving a review and a rating if you listen through iTunes. It helps others find the podcast. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back soon with another episode of the Cue It Up podcast.